Kane is in the building.
Good evening and welcome back to another episode of the Three-Peat Podcast. This is the seventh episode of the sixth season. And as always, I have the pleasure of being joined by my co-hosts for the week.
DJ Hummel,
Steven Manazzo,
and Josh Dromowitz.
Once again, if you don't know, my name is Alex Castle. I'm your host for this week. Last week, we took off, you know. We got to recharge the batteries every once in a while, but we're back now, and we're coming back to an interesting episode this week. This week's episode is going to be a mixed bag of emotions, so all I can say is strap in and get ready for the ride. We're going to start off with talking baseball, and the bulk of the show will be football, where we'll end with another new segment, so stay tuned for that. Well, gentlemen, it is very sad to say this, but the New York Yankees season is officially over. We got swept by the Astros, who you guys will give your takes on this when you're up, but arguably the best team in baseball. I mean, you know, I really started to get more into the Yankees in the postseason, and just watching the depth and the talent with the Astros was unreal, but definitely a frustrating ending, getting swept, not taking either of the games at home. But there's a lot to dissect from this. So today, joining us for this rant is a new character to the show, Stephen A. Hummel. Mr. Hummel, thank you for taking the time to join us. I know you've been cooking up a Knicks-like rant for the Bronx Bombers, so take it away. I want to hear your takeaways from this last series in the playoffs for the Yanks.
Well, first and foremost, I want to say it's completely disappointing to be on this podcast and talking about the Yankees this way. But I just want to start out with, they're the first team in MLB history with 50 strikeouts and 35 or fewer total bases in a single postseason series. I think that's completely unacceptable, especially with the roster that they have. Aaron Judge struggled. Josh Donaldson chose to be a fake tough guy and just loved watching first, like, fastballs go down the middle of the strike zone. The fans booed him in the last game of the series. Everyone, all the fans and the players and even management were like, they were surprised that they got booed. I'm not surprised. I bet you guys aren't surprised that they got booed. It was a pitiful performance this postseason. I was embarrassed to be a Yankee fan. I'm still embarrassed to be a Yankee fan. The list just goes on. They're the first team to lose five straight ALCS series. And I'm sure they're probably the first team to lose four straight to the same team. I mean, guys, they hit 173 in the postseason. It's the second worst batting average in a single postseason in franchise history. The lowest is 161 set in 1963. Like I said before, they were eliminated by the Astros four times. And it is the most times a single team has been eliminated from the playoffs in franchise history. And to put the icing on the cake, I want to talk about the motivational aspect that Aaron Boone and the mental training coach or whoever it is tried to do by putting together highlight tapes of the 2004 Red Sox coming back from down 3-0 to beat the Yankees and eventually become World Series champions. I just want to know why they thought using their biggest rival of all time and the darkest moment in Yankee history as a motivational piece when you're down 3-0 in a series. I just want to know. Guys, I don't have an answer. I'm sure you guys want to chime in. So by all means, my rant's over, at least for now.
That part, I'm glad you mentioned, because I was going to touch on that after, because we've all seen the Jeter documentary, and Jeter called it, and you just mentioned it, the darkest time in Yankees baseball, the worst series of games that they've ever played. The pain, misery, everything. And that ultimately ended the drought that the Red Sox had. And then ultimately they went on to win a few more championships. And then the Yankees openly said that they were using this as motivation. And it sounded like it was a willingly decision by the club to use this as motivation. I believe Aaron Boone was even on that team, correct? Yeah. I don't know why or what reasoning he had for doing this. It's one thing if you want to use an example like that to fire up a team, but I think the right intention would have been use the Patriots coming down 28-3 against the Atlanta Falcons as a better example, because that doesn't impact the team, because it's not like, because the Yankees were the ones who were down 3-0 of the Red Sox and then ultimately lost 4-3 in that series. That's going to hit home for a lot of guys because of how painful that ending to the season was. So if you used a different example, like the 28-3 Patriots, that is understandable. And I'm sure that would have been accepted in a better tone than it was, not only from the media but from the team itself, because this was the only time in baseball history that a team blew a 3-0 lead, and to this day there's still no blown 3-0 series leads because the Yankees got swept. But it was, I get the thought of it, but it wasn't a well thought out plan because of the emotion behind it. So it was just in really poor taste. And I'm going to let Stevie go, because this one's going to be a doozy.
You got that right. Because I had the pleasure, I believe it was 2 weeks ago, or no, 3 weeks ago now, where I went off on the Mets. And I had great pleasure kind of chirping the fans and the team. But now I got to chirp the Yankees. And do I necessarily have to? No. But I want to. Because, and it seems like it doesn't matter who rants, because Michael Kay has now gone off on the Yankees numerous times during the games. And nothing will seem to change. You know, obviously there was reports that Boone and Cashman will be back and blah, blah, blah. My biggest thing is I knew we were outmatched going into the series, especially how that Cleveland series went. I had no confidence in them. The way we looked against Cleveland, how we barely beat Cleveland going against the Astros. And I know that Seattle played them tough, but at least Seattle was actually playing their asses off. And Seattle actually looked like they wanted to be there, and they actually looked like a playoff team. So hats off to them. And like kind of like what we've kept going back to, I think it was the playoff experience and their youngness that kind of lost them that series. Give them a few years, and they can definitely take down the Astros if that team, that core remains together. The Yankees, on the other hand, no. And I went to game 4 Sunday night. I was there. I watched the Yankees lose at their home stadium, get eliminated, get swept, and the Astros celebrate on the field at Yankee Stadium while the Yankees walked in the dugout. And my biggest problem with all of this is us losing. Yes, it sucks. but where the fault goes. And it seems like the front office, even some of the players, are trying to fault the fan base, that they really don't want to be playing for the Yankees anymore, and that playing this past series at Yankee Stadium was not the best experience. Well, when you get swept in a big series like that to a team you've yet to beat, where every year, you know, you say the goal, World Series or bust, you know, this team is constructed to win a World Series. We worked our asses off to win the World Series. And then, oh, the fans were brutal because they were booing, because they booed Aaron Judge. Listen, you know fans love Aaron Judge, okay? And I don't really think even when they booed after he struck out all those times, probably wasn't like, you know, F you, Judge, you suck. It was probably like, what the hell is going on? How come no one on this team can hit? How it's the playoffs. This is like the time where you have to buckle up and grind and really grind out at-bats and like play your best baseball. And no one, it looks like everyone, you know, and everyone on the Yankees offense look like they never played baseball before. And it really irritates me how they say, and so you know what? If you don't like the boost because you suck, because it's like, why are the Yankees gonna cheer when the other team is doing good and or your team is striking out? Is that what you want? You want the Yankees fans to just constantly cheer, you know? If you really don't want any sort of fan involvement, then go sign with the Miami Marlins. Go play for them. Go play at Lone Depot Park, where they get an average crowd of probably 600 people a game, okay? You know? Or you can just keep watching tapes of the 2020 COVID season when there was no fans in the stadium. This is the Yankees. This is New York. I mean, like, I feel like, how do you not, like, it doesn't matter if you go to both New York teams, Boston, you know, Chicago, like, those markets are big markets. Their fans are so passionate. These smaller market teams, like, clearly don't care for a reason because they're a smaller market, you know? But these big fan bases, especially the Yankees, who have had so much success, not really recently, but for such a long time, and now when they don't, and it's not like it's been a year since they last won the World Series or made the World Series. It's been over a decade. I was in elementary school when they last made and won a World Series. I am now out of college. Same with you guys. And you're going to blame the fans. That is such bullshit. And pardon my language, but that is the softest excuse of any sort of excuse at all. And you saw Jeter. When in his documentary, when he said, when they got booed during the 2004 series or whatever, he said, I don't blame them. I would have too. Because he knows that, like, what the hell? Like, did we really just blow that series against Boston? You know? So, yes, this is different. We got swept. But how can you be acceptable of that? Like, the Yankees players should be more outraged than fans are. And they don't seem to care. They don't care that they just not only lost to the Astros now for the third time in the ALCS and now consecutive playoffs of not making it past the ALCS, but you just got swept and then the last game was at Yankee Stadium and they just don't seem to care, you know? And, you know, then Boone, like he kind of says, oh, it's a cruel ending, this and that. I don't know. But then how, you know, I just don't get it. And then, you know, Cashman and Hal. And how I don't get how he can stomach himself of still being the owner of the Yankees and their success being like his father's son doing it. Like I could see if he was just like a partner. I mean, he's George's son. Your father ran this team for how long and had so much success and knew what his standards were. And then now this, like you can be like, oh, we lost again. That's all right. You know, no changes can be made. You know, Boone, you'll be back. Cashman, you'll be back. You know, we don't want to spend big. I mean, look at Bryce Harper. Look at the Padres and the Phillies. The Padres have gone out of their minds trying to get guys to make the playoffs. And then they made it to the NLCS. That's awesome. You know, they went out and got Juan Soto. They signed Manny Machado a couple years ago. So they can make it to this point. Unfortunately, they fell short. But they beat the Dodgers, which is huge. One of the best Dodgers teams. Regular season record ever. And then the Phillies, you signed Bryce Harper to that big contract a couple years ago, and you get other guys to get to this point. And look, it paid off. What do we have? What do we do? Oh, IKF and Donaldson are big moves of the offseason. Wow. Well, Donaldson was probably one of the worst postseason players I ever seen in my life this year. Dude didn't even swing the bat. He struck out like every appearance. Huge. IKF got benched like half the games because he couldn't field the ground ball. And a couple times maybe he put the ball in play and got some hits. But besides that, he was not a factor at all. And those were our big acquisitions. You know, unfortunately, Frankie Montas, that didn't work out. You know, I can't necessarily blame Cashman, but he could have went out and got Castillo. Now, I know at the time, the return, you know, would we have wanted to give that? I don't know. But Castillo was huge for the Mariners in that late second half push and then into the postseason. The Yankees just don't want to make big moves, and I don't know why. But they say, oh, we spend big, we spend all this money. We spend all this money. You take on Donaldson's contract. He's like making more money than some of these top guys. So you want to take on a contract of Josh Donaldson, who has nothing left in the tank. He's not, if this was Josh Donaldson of the Blue Jays, I wouldn't be complaining. But he's not the same player he once was. He's old and he's washed up. Yes, he's not bad in the field, but he can't hit anymore. And we need hitting more than we need his field, his glove. And then, you know, just tired of the stop gaps here and there, not just at shortstop, but everywhere, you know. And it's just like the guy that they did spend on, Cole. All right, great. Then you didn't spend big anywhere else. No wonder why we're not going to go anywhere. And if you look at the front offices from the Yankees to, like, say, some of these newer teams, like the Astros, or not newer teams, but like the Astros, a lot of their front office is only, like, been for a couple years. They're newer. They're more modern. They know what it takes. They're younger. They, you know, they don't have, like, they haven't been there so long. The Yankees, Cashman's been there since 1986. I wouldn't mind. You think you'd have more of George's ways, but clearly not. And I know it's not totally his fault because at the end of the day, Hal has a final say, but it's half the Yankees guys are from that part. And listen, yes, they were very successful during, you know, the years that these guys were hired, but that's not the case anymore. And if they can't get it done at any other job, you would be let go. I don't understand why a lot of these Yankees guys remain to have their jobs when they don't finish their final goal. I don't, especially, you know, the Yankees, where they're so demanding, and, you know, Yankees fans are spoiled. The Yankees fans are this or that. But you know what though? The Yankees fans are very passionate and they demand winning because that's what we've gotten for however long. You know, if the Yankees were such like a poverty fan franchise, like some of these other teams, they probably won't be as mad. Like the fact that they made the ALCS, they'd be happy about. But the fact that, you know, and I know, like, I'm not just bragging that we have 27, but the fact that the Yankees franchise has 27 world championships, that's a lot. That's the most in like any sort of like league. So yes, I'm not going in like I was a lot, like I know I was only alive for one. That's why I'm this mad, because really within the past, like since 2000, you know, only like single digits have been of that. You know, a lot of that is from way back when. This is why Yankees fans are upset, because they're getting blamed for booing because and being passionate because they actually care. And it seems like not everyone else does that are actually the ones playing. And I just don't get it. And it's really frustrating. And you know what? If that's how, and I think the Yankees, they might be in for disaster because with all that information leaking out of them showing that video, like the Yankees are a joke right now and everyone is clowning them. And you know what? As much as like, it's annoying because I'm a Yankees fan, but they do deserve it because they are a clown show right now, you know? And it's really like, if George was still alive, it would not be like this. I'm not going to say they would be winning World Series, but they wouldn't be being made fun of like this. And I think we probably would be competing for championships unlike now. And at the end of the day, just keep the fans out of it because they did nothing wrong. You know, I know sometimes the fans get out of hand, like when they're throwing the stuff at that Cleveland player in the beginning of the year. All right, that's different. But for now, because we're booing and players don't like playing here anymore, grow up, you know? Or like I said, then get out of here then, because clearly you're not going to help us win if you're worried about fans booing. So.
Boy, that was something, Stevie.
Yeah. How long did I go?
Hey, that was a bro. I think that was like 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah. But, sorry, boys. You have to.
Hey, yeah, you had a little bit you want to get off your chest. I get it.
I did.
I turned off the timer because I was just so fascinated. So we'll say
I had my popcorn. We were good.
I have one quick thing I'll add in, then we can move on. And it was pretty big because I remember 3-4 weeks ago when Judge hit his 62nd homer, we talked about how that'll impact his contract year and what the final figure will look like. And I had brought up a proposal to you guys and you kind of thought I was ridiculous for saying it, but now I want to revisit what I said. And my exact words were, what Judge did in the regular season won't matter if he doesn't produce in the postseason. In the ALCS, Aaron Judge batted 139. Or sorry, in the postseason, he batted 139, 15 strikeouts. That's going to be the record-setting contract, 300 plus million guy. Yes, what he did in the regular season was historic and incredible and nothing short of it. But Brian Cashman is looking at that and going to Aaron Judge and say, hey, it's great what you did for us in the regular season, but there's no chance in hell I could give you what you were expecting because you didn't contribute when it mattered most. When the lights are the brightest, where were you? Because frankly, the only guy who I saw showing up to hit was Harrison Bader, a guy who only played 14 games with us in the regular season. Aaron Judge was nowhere to be seen. The Cleveland series, he was a strikeout every single appearance. The Houston series, with the rest of the Yankees minus Bader, nowhere to be found. So this is going to be a very interesting tightrope that we're about to walk on with Aaron Judge, because it could go very poorly based on how Brian Cashman approaches it. And frankly, it pains me to say it, but he's got a very valid reason to not want to pay Aaron Judge. If we're going to get a repeat of the regular season and then a repeat of the postseason, we're never going to win. It's just that we're never going to win if our best hitter, the leader on and off the field, the captain of this team, everything is hitting 130. We're never going to win anything. So if that is the case, then I don't think Brian Cashman will pay Aaron Judge.
I have to agree, nor do I think he should be paid the full amount. You know, the whole point of him going about the season the way that he did was, I'm going to prove myself. I'm going to prove my worth. And how can you say that you're worth, like you said, how can you say you're worth the full amount if you can't do anything when we need you the most? So I think this off season is going to be wild for the Yankees. I really do. I've seen speculation already of how the team would move forward without Judge. And I'm sure we'll talk about that as things start to roll a little more with the baseball off season. But I just want to put one more thing out there about the Yankees, because this, and we talked about it a little bit, but when I saw this quote, it really just took me back. And I was like, this is something that you have to analyze about future deals with the Yankees. So I think TJ talked very, very briefly hinted at it. For those of you who don't know, Michael Kay recently went on a rant about the Yankees, rightfully so. And one of the biggest quotes that was taken away from that rant was that the Donaldson trade is going to haunt the Yankees for a very long time. And that kind of, and you know, you guys are a lot more involved with the Yankees in terms of following them and whatnot than I am. So that's why I want to bring this question, the last Yankees question. When you hear Michael Kay talk about that quote, not even about the Donaldson trade, does that make you think that for future deals outside of Aaron Judge, that all hope
absolutely. Is possible? Before I even finish, absolutely. 100%. 100%. He's going to be a Yankee. He's tied to us till 2020, till after 2024. He'll be 39 or 40 by that point, making well over 20 something mil a year. Absolutely.
And Michael Kay, he lives, breathes, sleeps Yankees baseball. He always has, he always will. I'm pretty sure Michael Kay's from the Bronx or somewhere nearby. You know, he's been working for Yes pretty much since he knows the Yankees better than anyone else. And yeah, just like Fromm said, just like Michael Kay said, he's right. And it just, you know, and I'm not going to go read back into it, but it just shows a point of why, you know, why was that necessary? But other guys who actually perform well, like Machado, Bryce Harper, that couldn't be done. But Donaldson, you know, that needs.
Well, we had a 260, 270 short third baseman last year. His name is Gio Urshela. He was in the trade to get Josh Donaldson. If Gary Sanchez was so much of a problem, why couldn't you have just cut him? The Twins did that already, and they acquired him in the trade.
Or just trade him for like a prospect that like might have some potential or nothing, but really, and listen, Gary didn't do anything. So yeah, we didn't miss him at all.
It was nice. We were able to get Trevino. Higashioka looked better this year. Catcher was definitely not the problem, which I do give credit to Cashman for realizing that. But third base defensively, Donaldson, great. But we also have DJ LeMahieu. Shortstop, we have three prospects who deserve a shot, two of which were seen as MLB ready by the start of the year. And we had IKF, who won a gold glove at third base, move him to a new position. We saw how that worked out last year when we moved Glaber to a new position. It's just they don't learn from their mistakes.
No. And if you had to take on Donaldson's contract in order to get IKF, the guy you wanted, then why would you even like, that's just, I don't know. I don't know what was going through. The whole trade was weird. And then it proved more costly to the Yankees because, you know, the Twins, like whatever, they shedded that contract. And then IKF really wasn't the player. And then, you know, he didn't even play for a game for the Twins because he got traded from Texas to Minnesota and then pretty much Minnesota to the Yankees. So, yeah, I don't know, but I'm just, the Yankees are making me sick already.
It's a very, very, very sore subject right now. TJ, any final words?
It's just real quick. It just reminds me of the early 2010s when the Yankees would just take on old washed up veterans and just trade away all their top prospects. I'm having deja vu, boys.
Yeah, that's the same feeling that I have too. But, you know, right now this is all speculation. I think we're all still very hot from this last series. Definitely will not be the last time that we talk about the Yankees. So we'll table this discussion for a further episode. But now let's talk some positivity. It's football time, the best season of the year. Sorry if you like cricket or if you're really big into golf or bowling, but it's football season. And this is a special episode because it's the second time in this episode that we can talk about all three of our teams winning. So I want to table the Bears for a little bit later, but we're going to start off with a New York team that is currently, I believe they have they're tied for the second best record in the AFC, and that's the Jets. And I can't say anything bad about the Jets. I am impressed. I think Saleh was a great hiring. I think that a lot of these young guys are really starting to come into their own. Very sad about Breece Hall. He was one of my favorite rookies, but the Jets did make a move to bounce back in their running back situation. And that's where, Josh, you come in, talk about the move that they just made and takeaways from this last game against Denver.
It's weird because this victory Monday wasn't as joyous as the previous four because of the news about Breece Hall and then Elijah Vera Tucker, basically our best two offensive players this year. Breece Hall was going to be the runaway favorite to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. I think pretty much was a unanimous decision that he was going to be Offensive Rookie of the Year, which is just incredible to think about considering how many other elite rookie offensive rookies there are this year. Breece Hall was that guy. He was the workhorse. He had 5 touchdowns this year, led the Jets in total yards, was doing everything for us. Vera Tucker played every single position on the line so effectively besides center. He was that brick wall that we traded up for last year, and he needs elbow surgery. You just feel bad for these guys. These are first and second year guys. They're younger than us. So it's just extra sad to see. But shortly after the bad news with Breece Hall and Elijah Vera Tucker, I was worrying. I was like, okay, you know what? The Jets, they've been battling injuries all year. It's nothing new. Mekhi Becton was the first of it. But how will they bounce back from this? Because Michael Carter's a very good running back. He was our starter last year. But I wasn't really too confident in our other running backs that we had because I really don't like Ty Johnson and Zonovan Knight, who's an undrafted rookie, hasn't gotten a single snap yet. So I don't know if I could trust him. But the Jets shocked me, and they traded for James Robinson, who was a beast for the Jaguars. And he is the perfect, perfect guy for this Jets offense. Frankly, I thought it was going to be a guy like Kareem Hunt, but what James Robinson brings really fills that hole of being the workhorse power running back, the downhill runner. And it really showed me for the first time in a really long time that the Jets are serious about winning and contending and building for the future, because James Robinson's only 24 years old. He's a restricted free agent after this year. So the thought of having a three-headed monster running back next year of Breece Hall, James Robinson, Michael Carter is definitely a legit possibility, which makes Jet fans very excited and eager to want to see. But it's also the first time in a really long time that I could confidently say, I don't give a shit about the future, because right, I'm focused on each game and how we play each week, because the way the Jets are playing right now and the teams that we've beaten, we could play and compete with almost any team any given Sunday. Yes, I don't expect to win at every single game, and that's okay. But these Jets are playing very hard, making games very competitively. They've been in very tight situations where they've had to work out of. Look at the first game that they won this year with the Browns. They were down double digits with 90 seconds left, a minute 30, and they found a way to win on the road against a very talented Browns team. I mean, the Browns record doesn't show that right now, but at the time they were being hyped up to be a very scary team in the AFC. And I mean, tables have turned. Jets have beaten the Broncos, the Packers, the Dolphins. Yes, they've all been banged up in some sort. We are forgetting that the Jets are equally as banged up, if not worse. And this is the same Jets that have been a complete laughingstock the last decade. People would overlook playing the Jets because they knew it was essentially an easy win, and rightfully so, because they were easy wins. But this is not the same old Jets. Robert Saleh went on earlier in the year, right after the Ravens lost week one, and said he's keeping receipts. And right now, he's got a CVS receipt piled up from all the reporters and media talking shit about the Jets in the offseason. And Jets are 5-2 heading into Sunday and could walk out 6-2, hopefully.
It really, you know, and
sorry, I just want to add on.
Oh, yeah.
The best part about it all is, yes, we lose our offensive rookie of the year, but we still might have the favorite for defensive rookie of the year and possibly a top five cornerback in the NFL already in Sauce Gardner. What he's doing really just reminds me of Darrell Revis, and it's fun to watch.
He's a really great fit for the Jets, with Saleh being a defensive-minded guy. I think he's really fitting with the big market. It's all blending together very nicely. And I can't, you know, they're a competitive team. There's no doubt about it. Now, with the trade deadline approaching, my one other question about the Jets, we saw them make a move to fill a void with Breece Hall's injury. We have Becton, who is not going to be playing this season. Vera Tucker, who sounds like getting his elbow surgery. He's going to be on the IR. And I don't know the status of Brown, the guy that they sat.
He's playing.
He is playing.
You're thinking of George Fant, who's hurt. So Dwayne Brown started the year hurt. George Fant started the year healthy. Those two kind of flip-flopped. So now... Okay. Dwayne Brown is healthy. George Fant is hurt.
Okay. So with all that being said, with the Jets' mentality of being competitive and staying in the moment with this season, do you see them making a move before the deadline to get someone on the line to fill this void?
Absolutely. I've already seen the Jets rumored to have a few offensive linemen. Forgot who, as I was just quickly scrolling when I was at work, but I saw the Jets are in the mix and they're willing to spend because they have a lot of draft capital, because they've made some trades the past few years where they were complete sellers. So the Jets are loaded in draft stock the next few years. So the Jets are willing to spend on acquiring a big time offensive lineman this year. At the trade deadline, hopefully.
I respect the Jets for, you know, after losing Breece Hall, which was such a tough blow, because really he's been...
He's been the entire offense the last 2-3 weeks.
Yeah. And the fact that, you know, you're sitting at 5-2, which is second place in the AFC East, you know, I guess maybe not a top seed in the AFC, but...
Technically they're the third best team in the AFC right now. Yeah. They're tied for the AFC East right now with Buffalo.
Buffalo only has one loss though.
They have two.
They do?
Oh, maybe they have one because they just had a bye week.
I think it's Buffalo that has one loss. They're tied with the Chiefs that have two.
Sorry to finish my point. But I respect them for not just being like, that's so early. We lost Breece Hall. It seemed like, you know,
they were tied with the wins. That's what it was. Cause the Bills had a bye week. That's what it was.
Yeah. The Bills are 5-1. You guys are 5-2. But like, you know, the Jets realize that like we have a good team right now and like we're playing well. And like, you know what? Yes, it sucks that Breece went down, but they didn't cry about it. They didn't just say, well, we'll just go like, how can we get better? And then they went out and instantly got James Robinson, who's not just like a running, like he was, didn't he lead the league his rookie year in rushing?
I don't know if he led the league in rushing, but he was definitely up there in yards. And
he was over 1,000 yard rusher.
Was over 1,000 yards both years. And this year, he could very well be on pace for it as well.
Yeah. So the Jets have dealt with some tough blows even early before, with Becton. So they dealt with some tough blows and they just seem to be rebounding after it. And, you know, I hope this works out because, like I said, it's fun when you see both New York teams doing well. And I'll give the Jets credit. Jets fans don't seem to be or Giants fans. They don't seem to be cocky or anything like that. They're just really excited and just pleasant to have their teams doing well. And so I hope for your sake and for the Jets' sake that they do, you know, get some more guys and remain competitive and winning games and, you know, make the playoffs for the first time. And
I just found the articles and Twitter posts that I was looking that I saw earlier. Jack Conklin and Laremy Tunsil were the two big names that the Jets were linked to. I don't know if either will happen because those are some pretty big names. Then it would probably be a steep package, but the Jets are it looks like they are serious about competing. And Joe Douglas is definitely the right guy for this team for right now. So I'm very, very pleased with what he's done.
Like Stevie said, New York football fans right now are just continuing to be excited, but also remaining humble at the same time, because we know what it's been like the previous years and we're just going with the flow, taking it week by week. And that's what me and TJ are certainly doing. I don't have much to say on the Giants being 6-1. It really doesn't feel real to have not only the second best record in the entire NFC, but to have a better record than Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about some negatives from this game on Sunday, and then got to hand the mic to TJ to get his input. First of all, I give Jacksonville a lot of credit. I don't think their record is accurate. It speaks to their talent. I like Lawrence a lot. ETN is clearly the guy now with James Robinson going to the Jets. I think they've got a nice receiving core with Christian Kirk and Marvin Jones. I'll never give Evan Ingram credit ever. And then they've got some nice pieces on defense. And their run game killed us. And that's something that, you know, that's something that Wink's got to work out. I think that's not in his realm of specialties is the run game. I think it's more just pressure to the pocket and, you know, having the ball be dumped as quickly as possible or having the play be, you know, ending as quick as possible. I don't think the run game is really what we know him for. So I think that's something that's going to develop over time. But here is my public apology to the NFC Player of the Week. By the way, shout out to Sauce for AFC Defensive Player of the Week. We got to give a shout out to him. But Daniel Jones, man, what a turnaround he's made. And you know what? Everyone was right. He needed better coaching. He's got a head coach who just came from working with one of the best quarterbacks in the league. I think Mike Kafka is a really smart guy who's mixing it up a lot, letting Jones move the ball around in different ways. And the dude just looks confident. That was one of my biggest issues with him, was that Jones did not look confident. I would watch a game and I would look at his facial expression and I would be like, we're screwed. That's it. We're losing. Now it's to the point where he's yelling at Marcus Johnson to catch the ball. And then he's apologizing about it in the post-game presser. This is the Daniel Jones that I feel a lot better about drafting at the sixth pick. So definitely some stuff that we need to improve, but it just doesn't feel real. And Brian Daboll has been getting a lot of praise, as he should. But Joe Shane, Giants fans, give this man more credit. He was the assistant GM with the Bills. He took over, and he is exactly the guy that we needed to turn this team around. And he deserves more credit. Going into this week against Seattle, it's going to be tough. I'm looking at it as a tough battle. Seattle is leading the NFC West, which is crazy to think about. You know, shout out Geno Smith, did the MetLife shuffle with both of our teams, and now he's killing it in Seattle. And
frankly, looks better than the former Seahawk quarterback,
Mr. Unlimited. Yeah, I, I, we if we don't talk about that this week, we'll talk about that next week. But tough battle, but it is a great time to be a Giants fan right now. And I'm going to pass the mic to TJ. Just your takeaways, positive, negative.
Well, I'm gonna quote the talking Giants guys here because I agree with them. The defense played their worst game of the year and only gave up 17 points. So that right there is just goes to show not only the mentality that defense has, but the coaching has gone leaps and bounds with this group. I actually kind of I like to call them the band of misfit toys, because nobody at the beginning of the season would expect this type of record out of the talent that's on this roster. Everyone was using Dave Gettleman as the scapegoat, saying, oh, it's all him. It was all his doing. I mean, most of it was, but Shane has helped right the ship. And even Dave's has done everything he's doing now. And it's just, I'm not used to this football. You and I are the same way, Castle. Like we pinch ourselves after every win.
That's literally what I text TJ after every game, because he's usually at work and I'm usually texting him updates. I said, pinch yourself at work right now to make sure that this is real, that this just went down.
Yep. And it was real. One of my biggest positives is Daniel Jones. I'm not going to repeat anything you've said, but I want to talk about other aspects of his play. Right now he has 343 rushing yards and on the season. I'm going to give you a list of players who have less than him. You ready? Josh Allen, quarterback, makes sense. AJ Dillon, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Damian Harris, Najee Harris, Kareem Hunt, Jalen Hurts, David Montgomery, Kyler Murray, and James Robinson.
That's quite the list.
So not only
that's legend.
Not only is he getting it done on the ground, he's also getting it done through the air. Granted, he doesn't have a true wide receiver one. He's got a bunch of bums not catching balls for him. But I want to quote Rex Ryan from Get Up the other day. He said that if you gave Daniel Jones Lamar Jackson's receivers, Daniel Jones's numbers would be much different than they are now in the passing game. And I saw everything that everyone was saying on Get Up, like Dan Orlovsky. I thought he was going to have a meltdown, but he's right. Especially with the way that this team is playing right now this season, the offensive line has given him enough time that he can get the ball out. He doesn't have to scramble as much as he used to, just actually trying to get people open. It's more, he has the time, he has the patience. It's just, will his receivers catch the ball? Right now, we haven't seen that. But help's on the way. I think the passing game is going to just go up and up from here. It's going to be better by the end of the season. And just to, before I finish, I want to just touch on Saquon. That man is, he's a nonstop locomotive right now. That man is on his way to becoming like comeback player of the year. He's blowing away all expectations. He's on a mission. I'm loving what I'm seeing out of him. I hope he keeps it up. I hope he stays healthy, because there will be awards at the end of it for him this season.
Crazy to think that we potentially could have the coach of the year and the comeback player of the year. And we're going to talk more about the Giants' offensive situation next week. Maybe they'll make a move during the trade deadline. Jerry Jeudy has been a name that's been thrown
November
around.
November 1st, so next week it'll be over, so we'll have a lot to talk about.
If we somehow manage to land Jerry Jeudy, get ready for me to talk about that. But it wouldn't be a football talk talking about our teams if we didn't talk about the Bears. And I know, Stevie, you're out of gas from that Yankees rant. So I'm not going to hound you with all the questions. I just have one question for you. And you know, when I was watching the game, they were talking about your coach. I'm going to butcher his last name, so I'm just going to call him by his first name, which is Matt, I think.
Eberflus.
Eberflus, thank you. Who, I don't know if we discussed this or not, but when Brian Daboll was with the Cleveland Browns, Eberflus was also part of that system. So maybe that's a little good luck for both of us. But yeah, my one question for you is, what do you think has been the biggest factor with this team in terms of the success that we saw against the Patriots? Do you think it's Eberflus taking the time to do individual evaluations with players and having 10 days to prepare? Or do you think it's just guys who are stepping up? Roquan Smith had a huge game. Jaquan Brisker had a huge game. Shout out Penn State. He was huge when we watched him play there. So do you think
you think it's
been more coaching, more skill-wise with the players? You think it's both? What if you had to say either or, taking it away from the Patriots game, what would you say was the bigger factor in your win?
Game planning. I think the game plan, because especially on offense, because the defense really all year has played well, especially in the second half. We've only allowed, was it 2 touchdowns in the second half total all year? So defense really hasn't been the problem, as it's been the offense. And the offense was moving the ball like all over the Patriots on Monday night, and the Bears admitted, I don't know if it was Eberflus, Fields, or Getsy, or OC, that they stole plays from the Ravens with Lamar Jackson running against them, because Lamar Jackson, you know, was like killing them with his rushing attacks. So they, since they had the extra time, they like looked at those plays and added it in, and, you know, had more days to practice that. And you saw it. Fields with his legs he was destroying the Patriots. And I think that's going to be the biggest success for the Bears, is putting out the right game plan for Fields and using all of his capabilities, like his legs, throwing on the run. I mean, you know, his whole career in the NFL, he like hasn't been, you know, used the, like they have no one, no coach has been using that. And just really recently, the Bears have been doing more of it, and look how much better he's, you know. And I know, really, the Washington game, like, it may not seem like he didn't play well, but like I could still see improvement from the beginning of the year till now. And there's definitely still room for more improvement, but you also got to look at the guys who are blocking for him and the guys on the outside. There's like no one, there's no talent. So I think just being able to do that and play to his strengths is what's going to keep the Bears competing and winning games like this. And then just having Fields grow and then the team grow. And that's what I also went to the game Monday night. So I had a late couple nights there, Sunday and Monday, but Monday definitely made up for Sunday. And it was, and I was telling Promises already, and, it was really fun, and seeing Pats fans tight, not only that their team lost, not only did the team lose at home on Monday night in prime time, but the fact that their team lost to the 2-4 Chicago Bears by like 20 points at home prime time with everyone watching. They were so tight. It was great to see. Promise, I wish you were there to see it, because you would have absolutely loved it. And all my Patriots friends, or all my friends at our Patriot haters, whether they're, you know, Jets fans, or my buddy Trevor, who's a Dolphins fan, or I know Jackson was kind of liking a little bit, not that the Giants and Pats are obviously the biggest rivals, but, you know, there's obviously some history there, as you guys know. So it was so funny seeing it, and it was good, because for a while there, you know, Pats fans, Super Bowl is this, Brady that, blah, blah, blah. Now they're chirping which QB they want to start. You know, people wearing Mac Jones jerseys saying they want Bailey Zappi. I mean, it's just you couldn't get better than that. So the fact that the Bears have him like that, it was great to see. Or the fact that the Bears could have a franchise like that, you know, and shambles like that. Oh, it was going to get better than that. Now I just want them to do it to the Packers fans, because that's what I would get the most joy out of.
Those cheeseheads, they deserve it. But, you know, it was a great win for Chicago. All three of our teams had great wins this week. Going into this upcoming week, would be really nice if the Bears won again against Dallas. If Belichick could lose again, this time to the Jets, that'd be great. And if we could beat Seattle again like we did last year, that would be great. So really looking forward to this week for our teams, and hopefully next week we could have a similar recap with going over wins. But before we wrap up the show, we've been mixing it up lately. We've been doing Stardom Sit-Ems. We've been doing X Factors, kind of to end the show with a football segment. But this week we're going to do something a little different. This week we're going to talk about teams that are being led by veteran quarterbacks, because teams that have veteran quarterbacks seem to be all over the place. Either these guys are benched already, they're hurt, they're underperforming, you name it, it's happening. So we're going to quickly go around the horn and talk about which team we feel is in the biggest trouble with their veteran quarterback at the helm. And I'm going to go first. And listen, there are a good amount of teams out there that I think are in trouble. And I actually have to look quickly. I think this team is coming off of a bye week. Just scanning here quickly. And yes, it looks like they are coming off of a bye week. So maybe they'll be a little refreshed. But the team that I think could be in some hot water is the Los Angeles Rams. And I like Stafford. I liked the Rams team last year. I thought it was a fun team to watch, but this offense is just in trouble, man. I mean, Cam Akers is on his way out. He's going to be a big name to watch out for at the trade deadline, depending on where he goes. He only throws to Cooper Kupp. And yes, Cooper Kupp is arguably the best receiver in the league. But you're not going to get anywhere against these good defenses when teams can game plan and prepare better for Kupp. I mean, they've got a tough matchup this week. The 49ers defense is nothing to take lightly. So unless the Rams make a move and get another wide receiver, he's definitely in trouble. We know he's coming off some weird injury with his elbow. He's an older guy in the league. He's not really that mobile, so he can't use his legs as much to break out of the pocket and create new plays. And he's just not utilizing the offense enough. Tyler Higbee, he's got to be given the ball more too. Allen Robinson, you signed him for a 3 to 4 year deal. I'm not even sure the dude has more than 3 touchdowns this season. So that's my team that I think's in trouble. Yeah, we've talked about the Super Bowl hangover, and maybe that's an effect here, even though they won. I don't really know, but they're my team that's in trouble being led by a veteran quarterback. So that's my pick for this segment. Josh, what team's in hot water with their veteran quarterback?
I like the Rams pick because that was actually my second choice. But my team, I think, Stevie, you're going to love this. And it is the Green Bay Packers. I have watched the Packers lose to the Giants and then to the Jets in back-to-back weeks. So I got a firsthand view of those games. And what I have seen from that offense is pitiful. Their receivers cannot get open to save their life. They have Alan Lazard. They have Rodgers' favorite target, Randall Cobb, out for the year. They have
I didn't know Cobb was out for the year. What's the injury?
Or at least for an extended period. He broke his ankle. Broke his ankle against the Jets. Tanyan, Romeo Doubs, Sammy Watkins. They have a whole bunch of different receivers, but they don't have Devontae anymore. And people thought that was going to be a big loss, but didn't know to the extent. Oh, boy. Both parties really are suffering because the Packers receivers are generating very little offense. the running game is non-existent because they're running, their receivers are creating no offense. Aaron Jones, AJ Dillon are just being forced the ball. And Aaron Jones has had games where he's had 30 yards rushing because they're just forcing him the ball and hoping he could create some sort of magic.
Promise, tag me in.
In a second.
Okay.
Sorry, Stevie. Let me just finish and then I'll tag you in.
Very good.
They already trail the Vikings by two games. And I think that'll creep up to 3, 4, 5 games very quickly because the Vikings look very legit. So then you're already considering a wild card spot for the Packers. Okay, fine. The Eagles are 6-0. The Giants are 6-1. The Cowboys are 5-2. That's two wild card spots right there, possibly. You have Seattle, shockingly, leading the NFC West at 4-3. LA, 3-3. San Fran, 3-4. Arizona, 3-4. There's a chance that multiple teams there could end up being a wild card spot. Green Bay is 3-4. Chicago is 3-4. So right now, I am very worried about the Packers. And then, frankly, I don't think they're making the playoffs. Stevie, I'm tagging you in.
All right, I've been tagged. I'm in. As much as I would want to see another team, I agree with you, Promise. I think it's the Packers. And it sounds biased, but you know what? Screw it. Screw them. Screw their fan base. And they deserve it because the reason why they are the most screwed because they still have a Hall of Fame quarterback at quarterback and potential Hall of Fame. I mean, he'll get into the Hall of Fame. And they're still looking this bad. And he's going to be done relatively soon, whether he chooses to retire or, you know, like, I mean, after this year or he plays out the rest of his contract. But the Packers are also going to have no cap space coming up because they spent big on Rodgers, Bakhtiari, who now has been inconsistently healthy. And like, you hate to see it for a guy like that, but that's just the truth now. You know, giving money to Jair Alexander, Adrian Amos. So like, you know, yeah, they have a lot of money in draft picks that they put into their defense. Their defense has looked horrible, you know? And then, like I said, then they really put all the money into Rodgers on offense. Great. But, you know, what's he going to do if he has no weapons? You know, everyone, like I said, like, trips these young quarterbacks when they have no weapons. Oh, like, they suck. They got to get rid of them. They'll get Rodgers with no weapons. So the Packers' future is not bright at all. Like, they're going to have no money. Rodgers seems like he just doesn't, like, care anymore. He's so weird. They seem like they're off page, him and LaFleur. Like, and, you know, it's not like an early storyline, like, say, compared to, like, some of the last seasons, like, when they started off slow. Like, this team just looks different than the other teams. And yeah, I think they're screwed. And plus, the Packers now, for probably two straight decades, have had a Hall of Famer at quarterback. They literally went from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers. Some teams, like my team, have never had any tiered quarterback like that. That was that good. So the fact that then they could possibly go to a guy, and I don't think whoever's next in line, whether it's Jordan Love or whoever, is going to be as good as Rodgers. So they're really going to be screwed. Well, like a team like the Bucs, you know, they've had horrible quarterbacks before Brady. So they're used to it. So to me, I agree with Promise. I think the Packers are in really a crappy position, and I am loving it.
Gotta love to see those cheese heads melt, those stinky cheese heads.
Yeah, it's Sauce Gardner and all these guys, and they're putting in the microwave, and it's just melting in front of their eyes. And everyone's, I mean, I'm loving it. And I think, I know Chicago's loving it. I'm sure a lot of people are loving it because, you know, it's just, and the refs still try to give Packers and Rodgers everything. And, you know, there's only so much they could do.
Absolutely. It's, that both of you harping on the Packers is great. That was also on my list too. TJ, do you have a different team aside from the Rams and the Packers that are in trouble with their quarterback situation, being led by a guy collecting Social Security.
I do, and that's the team that plays in Mile High City. Broncos country, shield your eyes. This isn't the ride you were hoping for. I think that the Denver Broncos are in really hot water with their current quarterback. And I shouldn't be saying this about Russell Wilson, but I am. I don't know what's happened between three seasons ago to now, but this is an astronomical fall off. He's just not the quarterback I'm used to watching. And he's also I don't think he's fully focused on at least playing winning football. Cause he's doing all this rehab, crazy diets that he's trying to limit spare time, which is sleeping, eating, and using the bathroom. He's trying to eliminate all that so he can put more focus on football. And I think all that focus, what he's trying to do, is taking him away from focusing on what his job is, and that's the quarterback for the Denver Broncos. I've seen it in every game so far this season. When it's crunch time and it really matters, Russ, his reads are awful. He's been missing wide open receivers. In that game against the Colts, didn't he have Hamler wide open and just
wide open,
just missed him completely?
Game winning touchdown, and he threw it to Cortland Sutton, who had a D-back on him. Correct.
Yeah. So I don't know what's going on with Russ. I don't think he's the answer right now. I think with the way everything's going as well, Nathaniel Hackett's going to be gone mid-season. He won't last. That's my take with the Broncos. It's because Russ's poor play and the coaching. One of the two has got to go, and I think it's going to be the coach first, because that's usually where everyone points fingers.
I mean, you look at that first game of the season, taking that field goal, man. I think it's safe to say he's going to be on his way out first. And next episode, I want to dive in a little bit more to the Broncos and John Elway, and if we think his future is in the hot water too. But that's going to be it for this week's episode. We want to give our usual shout outs, OP Sports Betting. You guys need a break from FanDuel. You need a break from DraftKings. You want to mix it up and use some crypto to bet on the Broncos losing by 30. Go to OP Sports Betting. It's a great concept. We still hope to get Greg on soon, the owner of the company, the founder, to come on and talk more about it and give you guys more of a rundown. We also want to thank Liberty Shirt Co., one of our favorite sponsors. You got to go check them out on Instagram. Check out their website. They're suiting the best of Fox Sports every Sunday. They're throwing out some great stuff for college football too right now. I'm sure down the road, Stevie, they'll get you something, my friend. So keep those hopes up. But we want to thank Liberty for their sponsorship. And last but certainly not least, we want to thank our partnership with Wild Chat Sports, being part of their podcasting networking group has been truly a pleasure and a great opportunity. So we want to thank everyone on their end for continuing to partner and support us. And we want to thank you guys, the fans, for continuing to listen to us in the United States, all over the world. Thank you guys. Continue to follow the great social media work that TJ does. And we'll see you guys all next week for the next episode.